I've been, of late, been transferring files from the old website to the new design, and it's taking a long time. But as I've been transferring it, I came across a whole bunch of debates that I had with PETA and people that supported them, dealing with animal rights. And then also with Burger King coming out with their meatless Whopper and things like that. It got me thinking along this line and reminded me of a lesson I had done years ago. Back in 1999, it's been a long time. Teenagers haven't been born yet. The World Herald had an article. I found it hilarious, though I'm sure the writers of it were not intending to do that at all. It was on a new advertisement at that time, campaign by PETA, where they were basically claiming that Jesus was a vegetarian. And it presented a number of evidence to support their claim. One was, they said, well, Jesus was an Essene. Now, probably you have not heard of Essenes. But Essenes are a sect of Judaism. It was kind of a more of a monkish type of sect. And some of that sect were believed to be against the killing of animals and the eating of animals. But I want you to take note that it was believed that some of them were involved in that. They don't know for sure, because this was a very obscure sect that wasn't around very much. It's not even mentioned in the Bible. The next thing they use for their claim is to say that, well, the Bible doesn't mention Jesus eating meat. Well, they had to qualify that. By that they meant beef, pork, or poultry, because they had to admit that Jesus did eat fish. Now, why there's a difference between land animals and sea animals, and somehow that makes a difference, I don't know. But they wanted to make that point. Then they pointed out, well, Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple on two different occasions, and supposedly this is his protest over the selling and the sacrifice of animals, is what they claimed. And also the final claim was, well, the world started out as vegetarian, and so it remains that way. And it makes a good point. While it's, you know, for most of us, this is a minor little side issue. But at the same time, though, it does make a good opportunity for us to look into God's Word and see about how to actually deal with counterclaims and how to deal with people who are making arguments about the Bible. Now, so let's take a look at each of the claims and pull them apart. Now, Jesus was a Jew. He was an Israelite. And one of the things that marks Jesus in our minds is the fact that Jesus kept the law of Moses perfectly. He lived a sinless life. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and in verse 21, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21, it says, He made Him, that's Jesus, who knew no sin, to be sin on our behalf, so that we might become the righteousness of God in Him. Christ knew no sin. Another point like that is in Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15, where it says, For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Jesus understands the plight that we have. He understands the sins that we face, the temptations that we face. Yet He Himself did not sin. So as a Jew, He kept the law perfectly because he did not sin. Sin is the breaking of law. Now, under the Old Testament, all Jews were required to keep the Passover celebration. That's in Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12. And in verse 47, it says, all the congregation of Israel are to celebrate this, and this is referring to the Passover. This was not something that was optional. This was something that was required of all Jews. And specifically, the gospel mentions Jesus keeping three Passovers. That's how we know how long his ministry was, because it mentions his going to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover feast in Jerusalem. Now, part of that Passover, if you again in Exodus chapter 12, if you go back to verse 3, it says, so speak to the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, they are each one to take a lamb for themselves according to their father's household, a lamb for each household. Now, if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his neighbor nearest to his house are to take one according to the number of persons in them, according to what each man should eat, you are to divide the lamb. Okay. They are to each household to grab basically a lamb, basically figure out what the proper proportions are for how many individuals, based on the household number. If they're too small in the household, you combine with another household so that there is lamb for everyone as part of the Passover feast. And that lamb was to be eaten. In fact, in verse 10, it says, and you shall not leave any of it, the lamb, over until the morning. Whatever is left of it until morning, you shall burn with fire. The entire lamb was to be consumed. If there was any leftovers, that had to be burnt in the morning. But everyone was to partake of that feast. So if Jesus did not eat lamb, then he would have been violating the law, at least on the Passover. In Numbers chapter 9, Numbers chapter 9, and in verse 12, it says, they shall leave none of it until morning, nor break a bone in it. According to all the statute of the Passover, they shall observe it. This is not an option. This is a commandment from God. This is the law that was put in place. They had to do this as a Jew. And we know the Bible records Jesus ate the Passover feast. And that would have included roasted lamb. In Luke chapter 22, go to Luke chapter 22. And in verse 14, it says, when the hour had come, he reclined at the table and the apostles with him. And he said to them, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. The Passover meal was something Jesus partook in. And he instructed the disciples when preparing that meal to prepare a lamb for that supper. Back in verse 7 of Luke 22, when it came to the first day of unleavened bread, on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed, Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, go and prepare the Passover for us, so that we may eat it. And he says, we may eat it. But Peter's claim was that Jesus didn't eat anything but fish, as far as meat goes. Well, it's quite clear that Jesus did eat lamb. Does it come right out and just say he sat down for a lamb dinner? No, it doesn't directly say it, but that's about as close as you can get that we understand it. Now, they claim that Jesus was an Essene. Well, Essenes are not mentioned in the New Testament. We only know this from historical records. Other sects were mentioned, but not Essenes. So the claim that Jesus was an Essene is simply wishful thinking on Peter's part. There's absolutely no proof of that. And even if Jesus was part of a sect, which I doubt he was because of his beliefs and his teachings, even if he was from an obscure sect, they still haven't proven that all Essenes didn't eat meat, let alone prove Jesus was an Essene. So this is all fantasy. This is entirely a made-up argument. Now, as we pointed out, also Jesus did eat meat, or did eat fish. If you go over to Matthew chapter 15, Matthew 15 and verse 34. Remember the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000? Here, this is about the feeding of the 4,000. And Jesus said to them, "How many loaves do you have?" And they said, "We got 7 loaves and a few fishes." And then Jesus did the miracle where he basically makes the loaves more numerous than possible, and the fish for everyone to eat. He served fish. And in John chapter 21, this takes place after Jesus' resurrection. The disciples were out fishing on the Sea of Galilee, and they had trouble with catches that day. And in John chapter 21, in verse 5, it says, Jesus said to them, "Children, do you not have any fish? Do you?" And they answered him, "No." And he said to them, "Cast a net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you will find a catch." And so they cast, and when they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. Jesus directed them how to fish. And the number of fish they caught were more than they could handle. But beyond that, it says in verse 9, so when they got out of on the land, they saw a charcoal fire already laid and fish on it and bread. While they were trying to manhandle the fishing net with the overflow of fish, Jesus had cooked breakfast for them, which it specifically states that he cooked fish. And we continue on. He says, Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish which you have now caught." And Simon Peter went up and drew the net full of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." And none of the disciples ventured to question him, "Who are you?" knowing that it was the Lord. And Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and the fish likewise. Now this is the third time that Jesus was manifested to disciples, and he was raised from the dead. He served fish. Now, I can see somebody being nitpicky and saying, "Well, it doesn't say Jesus actually ate. It just says he cooked it." But the argument is about, hey, it's wrong to kill animals for food. And here we have Jesus participating in doing such. But take a look at Luke 24. Luke 24 and verse 41. And this is another instance when Jesus, after his resurrection, and says, while they still could not believe it because of the joy and amazement, he said to them, "Do you have anything here to eat?" And they gave him a piece of broiled fish. And he took it and ate it before them. One of the ways to prove that he wasn't a ghost was to show that, hey, I can eat a meal. And he ate broiled fish. That's why Peter couldn't say, hey, we had to make an exception for fish, because there's a verse that directly states that he ate it. So, where did the idea of killing animals come from? Obviously, Jesus supported it, but where did it come from? Because one of the claims was, well, the world started off vegetarian. And actually, that's true. When God created the world, everything, including the animals, only ate vegetables. That's what it states in Genesis chapter 1. But after the mankind was removed from the garden, it does mention that the sacrifices of animals began. In Genesis chapter 4, in verse 4, it says, Abel on his part also brought the firstling of his flock and of their fat portions, and the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering. Abel had killed a lamb, and God respected it. He had regard for Abel's offering. If it was wrong, that would not have been true. But by the way, you might not realize it, but there was actually an animal death before that. Because when Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, God supplied them with clothing. In Genesis 3 and verse 21, God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife and clothed them. I want you to take note. He made it of skin. Some animal died to supply the leather or at least the fur or whatever they wore that God gave them. Now, the eating of meat, that's not mentioned until Genesis chapter 9. After the great flood, and Noah and his family got off the ark, and Noah had made a sacrifice of many animals before the Lord, one of each of the kinds, God made a covenant with Noah and his family and said, every moving thing that is alive, in Genesis 9, verse 3, every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plants. This is one that over the years, those who support this have absolutely no clue how to handle this verse. Everyone they get stuck at it. Because it very plainly states, God gave every living animal just like the vegetables. Yes, did the world start a vegetarian? Yes. But God changed it with Noah. And he gave it to all mankind. And the old law did allow for the eating of various kinds of meat. Take a look at Leviticus 11. These are probably passages most people are not familiar with. Sorry, I didn't get this updated. But Leviticus 11, and in verse 3, whatever divides a hoof, thus making a split hose, and choose a cud among the animals that you may eat. There were certain animals that were allowed to be eaten in the Jewish diet. Down in verse 9, these you may eat, whatever is in the water, all that have fins and scales, those in the water, in the seas, or in the rivers, you may eat. So as long as they have fins and scales, that was a part of their diet. Down in verse 46 of Leviticus 11, this is the law regarding animal and bird and every living thing that moves in the waters and everything that swarms on the earth, to make a distinction between the clean and the unclean, between the edible creature and the creature which is not to be eaten. The law had stated there were animals that could be eaten. When Moses recounted the law in Deuteronomy chapter 14. Deuteronomy 14 And in verse 4, so these are the animals which you may eat: the ox, the sheep, the goat, the deer, the gazelle, the roebuck, the wild goat, the ibex, the antelope, and the mountain sheep. Any animals that divides a hoof, that has split hoof in two, that chews a cud, among the animals that you may eat. Going down to verse 9. These you may eat that are in the water. Anything that has fins and scales on it, you may eat. Down to verse 11. You may eat any clean bird. This is a particularly interesting passage because Peter says, hey, you can't eat anything but this land animal, poultry. And here we have a list that goes along and says the very things that they say can't be eaten. The law did allow for it. And the law came from God, not from man. So the eating of beef, the lamb, various poultry, fish, they were all allowed under the old law. And Jesus eating of these things would not have violated any of the law. Then we have that statement that, well, Jesus was protesting the sacrifices by throwing the money changers and the animal sellers out of the temple. Well, the law required numerous animal sacrifices. We start adding them up. The number's astounding. Because you had sacrifices in the morning, you have sacrifices in the evening. When a person sinned, there were sacrifices. When they just want to say thank you to God, there were sacrifices. There was a lot of animals being sacrificed at the temple. If Jesus protested against animal sacrifices, then he would have been protesting the teachings in the law of Moses. That would be a sin. But take a look at Mark chapter 11. Mark chapter 11 and in verse 17. And he began to teach and said to them, is it not written, my house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nation, but you have made it into a den of robbers? Here then, Jesus states very clearly, was he protesting the sacrifices? No. He was protesting the fact that they were making profit off of a requirement that God made for people in the Israelite religion. They were required to make sacrifices. People were using that to make money off of it. Kind of like the airports. They trap you inside and then they sell you food at X number extra dollars. You needed a sacrifice when you went to the temple. Oh, here's a convenient seller at the temple selling it for a profit. Extra profit. That's what Jesus was protesting. And also in John chapter 2. John chapter 2 and verse 14. And when he found in the temple those who were selling oxen and sheep and doves and the money changers seated at their tables, he made a scourge of cords and drove them out of the temple and the sheep and the oxen. He poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned the tables. And to those who were selling doves, he said, take these things away and stop making my Father's house a place of business. That was what the problem was. Not the fact that sacrifices were going on. You see, people like Peter have an agenda. They want to change the world into the fashion which they believe it ought to be. It doesn't matter what the Bible actually teaches. They'll say anything just to get their agenda pushed. And a lot of people don't bother to check. See, Christ's law allows for the eating of meat. In Acts chapter 15, there was a meeting about dealing with false teachers that were coming from Jerusalem. and how to deal with that. They were teaching people they had to live under the Jewish law. And part of that would have been rules about what meats you could and could not eat. In dealing with that, in Acts chapter 15 and verse 28, it was sent out, it said, "For it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us to lay upon you no greater burden than these essentials, that you abstain from things sacrificed to idols, from blood, and from things strangled, and from fornication. If you keep yourselves free from such things, you'll do well." Farewell. Is there a dietary restriction on Christians? Yes, we don't eat blood, nor things strangled, which would allow the blood to stay in the meat. But where there used to be laws saying there are certain meats you can't eat and can't eat, those laws are gone. These are the essentials. They didn't say, hey, as Christians, you cannot eat meat. No, not at all. In fact, in Acts 10, when God was trying to show to Peter that the Gentiles are to be taught the gospel and that the old law was no longer in effect, in Acts chapter 10 and verse 9, it says, "On the next day when they were on their way and approaching the city, Peter went up to the housetop about the sixth hour to pray. And when he became hungry and was desiring to eat, and while they were making preparations, he fell into a trance. And he saw the sky opened up and an object like a great sheet coming down, lowered by four corners to the ground. And there in it were all kinds of four-footed animals and crawling creatures of the earth and birds of the air. And a voice came to him saying, 'Get up, Peter, kill and eat.' But Peter said, 'By no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything unholy or unclean.' Again a voice came to him a second time, 'What God has cleansed, no longer consider unholy.' This happened three times, and immediately the object was taken up into the sky." But I want you to notice, God doesn't command people to do something sinful. Peter objected because his beliefs in the old law that no longer was in effect. But God told Peter, "Get up, kill, and eat." And when Peter objected, God scolded him for his objection. Later on, Paul talks to the Corinthians about dealing with food from unknown origins. What do you do when you got a piece of meat and you don't know if it was sacrificed to an idol or not? In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 25, he says, Eat anything that is sold in the meat market without asking questions for conscience' sake, for the earth is the Lord and all that it contains. If you don't know, don't ask. But notice this, from the meat market. And eat. In fact, later on, Paul talks about the fact that there were going to be times when false teachings would creep into the church. And in 1 Timothy chapter 4, 1 Timothy chapter 4, starting with verse 1, it says, "But the Spirit explicitly says that in latter times some will fall away from the faith, paying attention to deceitful spirits and doctrines of demons, by means of the hypocrisy of liars, seared in their own conscience as with a branding iron, men who forbid marriage and advocate abstaining from foods which God created to be gratefully shared in by those who believe and know the truth. For everything created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it's received with gratitude." Isn't that what people are doing? So basically, we have people, and this is one of the things that you'll find oftentimes with false teachers, is advocating some point, making claims, not substantiating, just making claims, and just repeating it over and over again because they know that most people don't bother to look. Most people don't bother to check. And a lot of people, if they can't find it directly by just going to the concordance and saying, okay, what can I find directly, they don't put two and two together to figure out what is actually going on. And so a lot of false teaching makes its progress by dealing with people who are just plain lazy as far as putting effort into studying the scriptures. But we as Christians need to study. We need to look at God's word. We need to dig into it. And yes, you know, this is not a major issue, but it's something that we ought to understand so that we can present the gospel. About the only time I know I run into this is when I go over like to Bali or someplace like that where there's a lot of vegetarians because there's a lot of Hindus. But these are issues that, you know, will come up. And it even comes up here. We got a Hindu temple on the north side of Omaha. We don't know about it. But so there, you know, it's making inroads that people are making enough of an impact that even restaurants are changing their menus to support it. And we ought to know what the Bible actually teaches. If there's anyone here, though, that today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God and would like to prayers your brethren on behalf, we also leave that opportunity for you. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of the selected.